Welcome to Life Matters with John St. Augustine.
We're going to talk with newsmakers and rule breakers and ground shakers and risk takers and see if we can't just find out really what's going on in the world in conversation that's not just about victory or who's right, but actual progress. If you're looking for a little inspiration instead of desperation, you found it.
This is Life Matters.
Hey, welcome back to Life Matters right here on CBS Digital Play.it. They call it a digital platform. I call it a digital playground because we get to do anything we want in here, basically, because it's my show, number one. And number two, what we're doing on digital radio is a little bit different than what you're used to on terrestrial radio. So I get to expand the boundaries as I see fit. And the best thing about doing this is I'll get an email. Nobody sends letters anymore, do they? Anyway, I get an emails from around the world, basically. I got one the other day from Australia. And somebody who's subscribed to the show, and thankful for that and glad that you're enjoying it. And she was saying that you say the word shit a lot. Yeah, sometimes I guess I do. I grew up in Chicago. Sometimes we say that. But I just found it interesting that of everything that I'm talking about, she thought I said shit too much. So I'll try to cut back on that. But here's the deal. Sometimes I learned a long time ago that nothing in life has any meaning except the meaning that I assign to it. Somebody could lose their job and think it's the best thing in the world that ever happened. And some people can lose that job on the same day doing the same thing and take their own life. So I think perspective has always been the rudder for me. And over 20 years of doing these shows and speaking to thousands and thousands and literally thousands of people from all walks of life, from Olympic athletes to pro athletes to congressmen and senators, you name it, teachers, I always come away with a new perspective or something that gives me a new way to see things. And so with all that goes on in the world on a daily basis that's brought to us all the time, you can't get away from it. Matter of fact, even this podcast, obviously, when you listen to it, you could listen to it on your phone. It's not really a phone anymore, is it? It's not. They call it a phone, but it does all this. It's like R2-D2 in your hand, I think. It does all this other stuff. And the phone, I think, sometimes is the last thing we use to make a phone call. So anyway, with all that being said, I'm fascinated and have been fascinated, especially being in the media, how we use technology. And if you could see the studio that I'm in, it's got all the cool lights going on. And I got the board here, and it's kind of like running the Starship Enterprise. And I'm on the 10th floor at CBS, and there's microphones and things and speakers and monitors and all this stuff going on that I keep an eye on. And all of this in this room is based on vibration. Think about it. So I'm having a thought. I have no idea, outside of the word shit, apparently, what's going to come out of my mouth. I don't have a script. I've never had a script. I go off what kind of shows up, and it's worked so far, and I think it's going to continue to work in the future. Why change it if it's not broken? But I'm having a thought, and thought comes from a vibrational piece of me, and then that thought comes out of my mouth, but it vibrates through my voice box, and then it vibrates through the air, maybe 2 inches between my mouth and this microphone. Listen, there it is. And then the microphone wires all vibrate into the board, and that all vibrates. And then I save the file in its vibration. I'll go back in and open this file, and then I will edit this file. And you can see all the vibrational pieces of my voice and my guest voice on the clip. It's really pretty amazing when you see it. What happens then? It gets shipped off to New York through vibration. I've done it on wireless. No wires. It's like magic to New York from Chicago. And Brian in New York grabs the file, opens it up, does his piece on it, and then he puts in a file and saves it. And then next week on a Tuesday, he'll open it up and send it into the computer. And then you get it in Australia, all from vibration. And so if I look at that as a metaphor for life, how I see life, it's kind of like my mom used to say, you know, birds of a feather flock together. If you don't like the flock you're in, tell them to flock off. And what that always meant to me was, you know, when you're with people of like mind and like thought, that's good. Sometimes it's even better to talk to people that you don't have a lot in common with because you could actually learn more. But you just got to be careful where you're headed and what you're doing with it. So on a vibratory sense, all the shows I've done over the years, thousands of shows that I've done, all to me have that as a rudder to kind of lift things up. Because we all know You can go not too far on the web or on the radio or where have you on the television, and all the vibratory stuff that comes to us is most, if not all, negative. Here's what's wrong. Here's what's not working. And there's value to that to some degree. But as I've pointed out on the show many times, and Rhonda Britton pointed out on this show, we're not wired for this stuff. We're just not. We haven't been on the planet very long. We think we're running the show, but we're really not. So when I look at the people that I'd like to talk with, I don't talk to anybody. I like to talk with people. I like to learn and expand and see what it is. I like to look at what they're doing with their lives in a vibratory sense and how they use that to make an impact in the world. So about a month ago, I was approached, maybe a little bit longer ago, from a woman who had done some work with me when I was doing Oprah Radio, and she had sent some guests over, and we had not obviously talked for about 5 years, and she found out I was back on the air, and that was all well and good, and I got this pitch, as we call it in the business, and the book is called The Journey Within, and it's about exploring the path of yoga's ancient wisdom, and it was from the author of the international bestseller The Journey Home, Radhanath Swami. I had heard of that book a year or two ago when it came out, and I know it had done very well, and I thought, well, okay, let me see if I can get to this. And so there was a few other people in line. I had to figure things out. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of fell together in the last few days. And I was so excited that I was up since 3:30 this morning reading the book, going through things. I've watched his TED Talks. And in all of it, I find that higher vibration that I'm so looking for. He's got a great story to tell, great messages. And at heart, he's really a Chicago guy. And he joins me this morning on Life Matters. Radhanath Swami, welcome to the show. Glad to have you with me.
Thank you, John. It's truly an honor and a joy to be with you and all of your listeners today.
Well, let's start at the beginning a little bit, because this I find transformationally fascinating. And I want to urge people when they go on YouTube to look up your TEDx talk, because you allude to some of this. But you weren't dropped off on the planet in your present form, were you?
I was born in Chicago. I grew up in Highland Park and Deerfield area. And when I was 19, of course, before that, this was in the 1960s, there was the civil rights movement that I was a part of and the counterculture. And at 19, I decided to take a summer trip to Europe just to see how other cultures and other people from different parts of the world view life and the same problems that I was really struggling with in my own life. And eventually, there was a certain evolution in my path in life, and I decided to hitchhike from London to Greece, through Europe, and then through Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan to India, where I lived in the Himalayas with various holy people of various religions and spiritual paths. And eventually I found my path in bhakti yoga, which is the yoga of devotion, which aims at awakening the innate love that's within everyone's heart. And I dedicated myself to trying to help people through that connection that you're talking about, that vibration that is within all of us and within everything, the vibration of God's grace, and to be an instrument of that grace. So for the past 30 years or so, I live in the Maharashtra state in India, Mumbai, where we're trying to do, you know, whatever we possibly can to enlighten people's consciousness and help people physically, spiritually, emotionally. And about 5 months a year, I travel to different parts of the world.
So today, I just want to make sure I put all the cards on the table. And this is so interesting to me, because I've always, you know, change is the one thing I think we need the most as humans, but we fear the most. And sometimes change, if you don't change, the universe kind of moves you in a direction that you may not want to go, but is probably better for you in the long run. And I know that you're in Mumbai most of the year, and then those 4 or 5 months a year you travel the world, and I think, oh, I need to apologize to him for what we're doing while he's busy. Because when I look at the opposite of this, what you're doing most of your year is feeding kids. Over a million kids a day are fed in India because of the efforts that you have and some of the ongoing programs, and working with people on a spiritual basis and helping them out, and people that are in really, really dire straits. And here, you come to Chicago to visit your father, and in this city, we're having a meltdown if it's 38 minutes on the Eisenhower. So this concept of perspective, before I get into some of the meat of this, when you come back, quote, into our world, the Western world, which you are from, What do your senses tell you? You see what's going on with presidential races and all that's going on. You're stepping basically from one perspective of the world, one reality of the world, back into this seemingly endless chaos. How does that affect you?
I've come to learn that the real problems, whether in the East or the West, that everyone's facing is we're all looking for pleasure, we're all looking for safety, we're all looking for happiness, and there are so many challenges to that. It could be poverty, it could be oppression, or it could be, you know, people who are envious or competitive of us. It could be due to our relationships, or it could be due to our own, you know, our own mind and the way we look at things. And unless we really try to address that issue of how to find that place within ourselves that we could really be a positive instrument of change through whatever we do, then, you know, the problems, like a cycle, they just keep revolving again and again and again and again.
Are you of the mindset when you bring up that theory of that they continue again and again, they're in a cycle, that are we not learning what we're supposed to learn? Are these lessons repeated until we learn them? I'm fascinated, quite frankly. You know, especially in America, we're not real big on history. We'd rather forget than remember stuff. And if you go back, especially right now in presidential politics, it was really nasty 150 years ago, 100 years ago, and we think it's worse now. And I think part of the problem is we're inundated all the time. There's no escape from the information unless you shut everything off. But is it of your mindset and your belief that all that's going on, that we create, it's not put upon us by some, you know, other planet, as far as I know, that we're doing this to ourselves to evolve? Is this just part of our evolution?
it's results of the choices that we make individually and collectively. Destiny is created by our own free will to a large extent. I may have a choice to get on any airplane at the O'Hare Airport, but if I get on an airplane to London, once the airplane takes off, I have no choice of where I'm going to go. I'm destined for London because I made that choice. But of course, I do have a choice what I'm going to do on the airplane and what I'm going to do when I get to London. So we always have free will. And once we speak something or act in a certain way, then we're destined to a certain response, a reaction to that. And then whenever the reaction may come, we still have the free will of how we're going to respond to that. And what I see, John, is because of a lack of inner fulfillment in people's lives, people become so obsessed and attached to superficial things, which really don't amount to much of anything. We see a grain of sand as a mountain, but when we actually see the real mountain, then we see this piece of sand for what it is. People are looking for love. People are looking to be loved. And in the absence of that, you know, deep experience, we try to compensate for that with power, with prejudices, with money, with property, with so many different types of things. And, you know, from a spiritual perspective, the origin of that inner propensity to love and be loved comes from the soul's natural experience of feeling God's love, feeling God's grace in everything, in everyone, everywhere. And if we can experience or connect with that within ourselves, then we can actually recognize that everywhere. And when we're disconnected from that, then we're trying to replace that fulfillment with all of these superficial things.
I thought long ago that instead of trying to define God all the time, maybe I just should allow God to define me. It'd be a whole lot easier. And then just go with that, you know, because then there's that. And you know this, obviously you spend enough time here. You grew up in Chicago. These things that you're talking about, I say to myself, I mean, first of all, you are known around the world for your spiritual work and you know, I mean, Russell Brand and Dr. Cornel West and all the many scholars just support the concepts and the teachings that you put out into the world that are working. And I think it's like a ripple effect. It's offsetting so much of the negative. And as I was doing the open of the show, I talk about the constant pounding that we take, that we put upon ourselves every day, and it becomes an addiction that we can't break away from watching the news, and it's never any different. It's basically the same. There's nothing new to it anyway. But this cycle goes over and over again, and you're talking about finding that part within ourselves, which I agree with you. It's got to be the missing ingredient to everlasting, much larger world peace. And in the same breath, I say, on the news today, someone's going to blow something up, blow themselves up. There was 5 murders in Chicago last night. All of this lower behavior, lower vibrational stuff, does this come, in your opinion, your belief, from total disconnect from that source and connected to ego instead, or connected to fear?
If we have a strong foundation in a building, then when a storm comes, it sustains. But if there's a weak foundation, then when the storm comes, the building collapses. Emotionally, if we have a strong emotional, spiritual foundation based on integrity, based on inner fulfillment, based on values, then when the storms of life come, which they will, through temptations and through fears, then we act in ways that are neither beneficial for ourselves or for anyone around us. But if we have that strong spiritual foundation, then we'll actually grow through the storms of life.
And that's how it was designed. That's the idea, right? That's what we're going for here, to grow through those trials. That before we go to break here in a few minutes, I think this is the perfect lead in to the story that starts out your book called The Journey Within. You mentioned being in airports and going to London, and you spend a lot of time in airports. And I've read a few stories online where people see you in airports. And this particular time, a woman named Dorothy spied you across the airport terminal, and there was an hour delay in a flight. And I thought that here's the part that got me the most. I want you to talk about, if you will, maybe your conversation with her. But I understand this part, and this what made it more real for me, that she turned away from the counter and saw you sitting there in your robes, and she was going to make a beeline for you, and you were thinking not, oh, this is a divine assignment. You're like, really? I just did this for 4 days, right? So you had already kind of had your fill of this stuff, and she walked over and said, are you a monk? And what did you say?
I said something like that.
Yeah. I think the conversation when she was asking about she had lost her father, her husband and family members, and the business was going under, and she had been given a terminal cancer diagnosis, and all this stuff was heaped on her. And her main thing was, why is God doing this to me? And I'm going to tell you what, as we're doing this show right now and people hear that, I think that's such a prevailing mindset that somehow, somewhere, whatever your version of God is somehow picking on you to make your life hard. And to that you say what?
I asked her to sit down and explain, you know, what was in her heart. And when she did, what appeared to be outrageous, obnoxious behavior to everyone in that waiting lounge of the airport, after hearing what she was going through and why she was acting that way, I felt complete pity and compassion toward her and just wanted to help her in whatever way I could. So, you know, we had a discussion, and as you said, John, every situation we have a choice of how we're going to perceive. We could make either a curse into a blessing or a blessing into a curse. And I shared with Dorothy that we all have to die eventually, but you do have a choice to live the rest of your life and die in anger, in frustration, or in an enlightened state, in peace and in love. We all do have that choice in every situation. And from that point, we had about a four-hour discussion, actually. Mm. And that discussion is summarized in the book that I wrote.
The book is called The Journey Within, Exploring the Path of Bhakti, which is a contemporary guide to yoga's ancient wisdom. Radhanath Swami is joining me today. We come back, I want to talk about some of the bigger questions in this book, because they're not just big questions over in India or London. They're big questions wherever you're listening to this show about our mind, about ego. And if you're in this country, it's like, what the heck is going on with all the presidential? I'm fascinated, Swami, that every 4 years we go through this again and again and again. And it's like the circus comes to town and the clowns show up and we go through it. And I don't think we're learning anything, which fascinates me more than anything else. We'll come back after this. Take a short time out. Take care of the people that take care of us. Life Matters continues right after this.
The best deals at your favorite stores? CBS Local Circulars has you covered with access to the hottest sales around, from electronic stores to baby stores and everything in between. Go to circulars.cbslocal.com today to get great deals from retailers like Target and Macy's. You're listening to Life Matters with John St. Augustine.
Back at it on Life Matters, CBS Play.it. That's where I live, at least an hour a week. You can find all my shows there. Starting going back 6 months already. Can you believe that? This is episode number 26. If you're counting, if you're not, you should be. There'll be a test later on. Radhanath Swami was born right here in Chicago in 1950. At the age of 17, he traveled overland from Amsterdam to India, where he lived in the Himalayan caves, and he learned from revered masters about this holy and sacred yoga, and eventually became a world-renowned spiritual leader in his own right. In his acclaimed first book, his memoir, The Journey Home, that has been translated over to 20 languages, has been published over 40 countries worldwide. He kind of recalls that journey, and this is his latest book called The Journey Within. So now it's time to go inside and figure out what's really going on here. And he joins me this morning from Chicago. Radhanath, not that long ago, are you familiar with Merle Haggard, the singer?
I am.
Oh, really? Do you know any lyrics? Because I'll sing them with you.
I do not.
Okay. Well, the reason I bring it up, you talk about, and maybe when I'm done, I'll sing a few songs. But I read he passed away last week at the age of 79. He passed away on his 79th birthday. And what was interesting to me is that he told his family a week before he died that he was going to pass away on his birthday. And apparently, as his son points out, that whole week in between the time he made the announcement and his passing, it was like a journey through time for them all together. And they had all that time with their dad and all that stuff. And so it was so interesting to me when you talk about the enlightenment, how we leave the planet, how we exit stage right, that this is a guy who at many times, drugs, alcohol, you name it, he did it. But he started to work himself into a different human being and to be able to have some consciousness to go, you know, in a week, I'm checking out. So get ready. I thought that was just really profound, really profound.
death is inevitable for everyone. And, you know, according to how we connect with our own soul, with our own source, with God, then naturally these types of intuitions are given to us.
The human mind has always been, I think, it still is the last frontier on so many levels. It's where all our beliefs and our thoughts and ideas and fears emanate from, all that's stored in there. And you were talking earlier about overcoming a lot of different things in life, and I think so many times it's the fears between the ears that stop us more than the stuff we can actually see in the world, which we end up creating anyway. But your work has been about, at so many levels, and what the book's about is being able to overcome that ego mind and that stuff that says, I'm not connected and everybody's out to get me and the world's a bad place, and the stuff that gets reinforced over and over again. Is, in your opinion, in your belief, in your practice, is it meditation that can work us out of that? What do you say to someone who's stuck right now, you know, on the Eisenhower, that's listening on this podcast, that has, they're late for work, their kids are sick, you know, you got 9,000 things going on. How do we get out of that mind, that primitive mind, and get into a more enlightened place in 21st century America? No pressure, by the way, for that answer. Fix it right now, please.
I'll just give a couple examples. In India, I oversee a hospital, Bhaktivedanta Hospital, named after the guru that I've accepted, whose compassion truly inspired me. His name is Prabhupada. And we do a lot of charitable activities, especially emergency relief. And when our doctors and volunteers go to an earthquake area where 10,000 people have died and hundreds and thousands of people are without their homes, without their shops, they're injured, they've lost practically all of their relatives, and they're in the cold and the rain, and they have nothing, no food and nowhere to go. And we're trying to help those people. And we look in their eyes, and even the slightest bit of help we can give them, especially giving them a spiritual way of looking at things, along with you know, the physical and emotional help, they're so grateful. And if we understand that in the world, a large portion of the population are to some degree like that. So what they would give to be stuck in a traffic jam on the Eisenhower Expressway for a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a little thing. If we see it in the content of the experience of so many other people's lives, we'll see all the blessings we have and be grateful for the blessings.
This is
a very important,
yes,
way of being happy, is to focus on all the gifts we have, all the blessings we have, all the love we have, and not see significantly the little challenges that we have to go through.
As soon as you said that, I just wanted to jump right in there and ask, because this is, to me, the crux of it in so many ways, is we don't try, you know, in this country especially, I think that it's so easy because of the way the media is set up and all these influences that we can find out what's going around in the world right now, but it's only little sound bites and it's only little pieces. And it's not the full expression of life. It's just a mirror to some degree that's about 19 seconds long, and then you're on to the next thing. And so this stuff does not take hold as it should. So when I turn on the television and there's a commercial on for Feed the Children, you can easily change the channel. But when you're in it, like you are, you don't have the chance to change the channel. You become immersed in these things. And so I'm wondering, as you're saying, you know, the thing about it is getting, how do we get our mind, or what needs to happen? What is the leverage point that we need to put on ourselves to not change the channel? To look, when you go back to India and Mumbai, and you do all the work that you do, it's a long way from Skokie, but maybe not so much. And so part of you lives in both worlds. And how do you, how do we get leverage on ourselves to probably stop just complaining about how bad everything is and actually do something to make one little quarter better? Is it a simple thing as, you know, reading to a kid after school? Do you have to, obviously not everybody's going to go out and build a hospital, but how do you get leverage on yourself to do that? What kind of pivot point do we need to push off the ego that says that's their problem, not mine?
Just like an athlete, John, doesn't go into a championship game without practice. Practice is very important, because in life there's going to be so many challenges we have to overcome, and we have to be prepared for them. And in our tradition, there's three principles. In Sanskrit, the words are satsang, sadhana, and sadachar. Satsang means to be with people who inspire us, who encourage us, who infuse us with a positive vision of life, who educate us in the higher values and the higher purposes that we're really here on this earth to pursue. Satsang means to read enlightening literature, to be with enlightening people, and to be in enlightening places. And the next principle, sadhana, means to put some quality time aside each day, if possible, to make that inner connection. Just like on radio, there are so many frequencies, and according to how you turn the dial, you're going to tune into a particular frequency.
Like this show?
Like this show.
Yes, and this conversation. Good point. Keep going.
So, you know, there's frequencies. Everything we do, everything we say creates like an energy. And there's the frequency of individual and collective greed and anger and envy and selfishness. And if we tune into that frequency, then we're really affected by the whole global effect of that. But there's also goodness. There's also compassion. There's also grace. And to tune into God's grace, which nourishes our own compassion, is very important. And through meditation, and in my tradition, we chant God's names. In my tradition, Krishna is one of the prominent names of God. And we tune in through this meditation or through this prayer or through a carefully executed ritual. You know, we tune into this higher frequency within our own hearts. And once whatever we tune into within ourselves, then we become an antenna, and we emit that all around in the world. And today, people are so much tuning into negative frequencies, and therefore they transmit negativity. But if we put some time aside to tune in to the love, to the virtues that are inherent within us as eternal loving souls, then we can, whether we're doctors or lawyers or in business, or whether we're in the media, or whether we're in a religious order, whatever it may be, we can transmit grace. We could transmit compassion in whatever we do. And that's so very important. And the third principle, sadachar, means through the company we keep, through the practice that we follow, then we integrate that with everything we do within our life. And we live with character. We live with values. We live with principles. Selfishness is due to a deficiency of inner nourishment. It's due to the hunger of the heart that we're looking for things to satisfy that emptiness within us.
Mm-hmm.
There's a saying that people should love people that use things. But unfortunately, so often today, people love things and they use people to keep them and get them. That life is an empty, superficial life. Whether we're decorated as billionaires or millionaires, or whether we're, you know, living in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, you know, what the heart is really looking for is that connection of relationships, connection of love. And when we tune into that frequency and live by those values, then we see the whole world not as curses, but opportunities to serve. In Sanskrit, the word karuna means compassion. And this is the universal principle of humanity. This is the universal principle of every religion, to live in a spirit of compassion, compassion to the body, to the mind, and to the soul of others. And that compassion is not just something sentimental. It's born of an experience within ourselves that we discover, that is awakened, but it is also expressed through intelligent, directed, dynamic action.
Mm-hmm.
When we actually understand who we truly are, then we'll see all living beings as our brothers and sisters, and we'll care.
It's interesting to me that so much of you said, first of all, you know, you probably heard me do the open in the show, and my mom said, birds of a feather flock together, and you said the same thing in different words. Hang out with people that are like you, that help you raise your vibration, that build you up and don't pull you down. You talked about spending time every day with yourself to figure ourselves out, and we may even have to schedule that on your iPhone to figure that out, but it's so worth turning everything off. And then the first principle of immersing yourself in material that feeds the better part of yourself. And I think those three things right there can literally save your life, because in this country, the average age, if you're lucky, is 77.6. That's the average life expectancy, which is about 28,324 days. And if all you do is worry about politics and sports, and you get to the woulda, coulda, shoulda end of your days, it's going to make life a lot more difficult than it really needs to be. Radhanath Swami is a guide. He's a community builder. He's an activist. He's an acclaimed author. His second book is called The Journey Within, Exploring the Path of Bhakti. It's a contemporary guide for yoga's ancient wisdom. I am so honored to have him on with me today for a worldly perspective. For a worldly perspective. Life Matters continues right after this.
The best deals at your favorite stores? CBS Local Circulars has you covered with access to the hottest sales around, from electronic stores to baby stores and everything in between. Go to circulars.cbslocal.com today to get great deals from retailers like Target and Macy's. You're listening to Life Matters with John St. Augustine.
The book is called The Journey Within, Exploring the Path of Bhakti. It's a contemporary guide to yoga's ancient wisdom, and Radhanath Swami is the author of the book. And Russell Brand, comedian, actor, author, activist, about nine other things, said that Radhanath Swami has conveyed the divine light through his writing with the gentle and seductive effortlessness that he does in person. This book is a joyful way to move closer to the truth within you. And he joins me in the last segment on Life Matters. You know how many times I practiced your name last night?
I'm very honored. Thank you, John.
Last thing I wanted to do is get on radio and say it wrong. So I even got a hold of your publicist. I said, phonetically tell me how to say this, because I listen, John is easy. Radhanath? No, not so much. But I worked on it and I nailed it. Listen, in your book, you cover so much ground, and there was this this quote by your teacher, and I want to see if we can grab these two things before I let you go here. But your teacher said, the manifestation of the world is not accepted as false. It is accepted as real but temporary. This material manifestation takes place at a certain interval, stays for a while, and then disappears. And so when I was reading that chapter, I started thinking about how that applies to the Western world, and that this cycle, as you talked about, continually pops up, it's real, it's gone. It pops up, it's real, it's gone. And it is a continuous thing. And I find it interesting, fascinating, and quite frankly, very irritating that it seems like for the last 100 years, 50 for sure, we have gone in this infinity symbol, Mobius, over the same stuff over and over and over again. It becomes generational. And I think until you question who you are, you always become someone else's version of you. We don't question our existence, I think, to a great degree. And, you know, we both, a few years apart, grew up in Chicago, and we don't put ketchup on our hot dogs here. Nobody knows why. We just don't. It's that kind of mindset that rolls into the bigger things. Well, I've always driven this way. I've always voted this way. I've always lived this way. I always eat this way. And I find either you're evolving in life or you're revolving in life. And both of them will get you somewhere. One you've seen before, but evolving takes you to different places. So that concept of what's real and what it is an illusion, I think, throws us off to a great degree as we observe what's going on in the world and try to respond to it. How do you cut through that and get down to making things work in a world that seems to be shifting so much?
Long ago, when I was just a teenager, 19, I lived on the bank of the Ganges River in the Himalayas. And I was without any company of humans. I lived in a cave in the forest. And I was trying to really find myself, and I was really connecting with nature. And I remember one of the beautiful lessons I learned by watching the Ganges is the waves in the Ganges are constantly changing. They appear and they disappear and they appear and disappear. And, you know, fishes are swimming and jumping and everything's changing on the surface. But deep down, the current is constant. And I believe that's a metaphor of life, that there's so many things that are constantly changing, but there are constant truths that are beyond time. They're what great philosophers, great saints have reminded humanity of and are still reminding humanity of, you know, throughout time. And what is that truth? In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a beautiful verse that explains that when you know the truth, we know that every living being is a brother and a sister. When we know our own soul, the body changes from infancy to childhood to youth to old age, and ultimately the body must die. And the mind is constantly changing. But the witness, the true self that's observing these things is a part of God. It's the soul or the Atma, the living force. And when we understand the truth of who we truly are, then we naturally understand the truth of the beautiful relationship we have inherently with not only all of humanity, all different races, religions, nationalities, whatever our sex, you know, we are all beyond that. We are all within that. We are the living force. Then we understand and appreciate and learn to love. And when we see things that are wrong, you know, however we may act on to resolve that according to our particular position in society, we do it with compassion. We don't do it with hate. And we also learn to see that wherever there's life within the animal world, that life is sacred. And the environment, the whole world, is the sacred property of our beloved Lord. And when we see that, our worldview changes. We no longer believe that I am the proprietor of what I have, and I could use it any way I like. Rather, I'm a caretaker of sacred property that is entrusted with me, whether it's my money or my property or my intelligence or my skills or my fame. I've been entrusted with this temporarily. And I should take the responsibility to utilize these things in harmony with the current of truth, the current of grace and compassion. That's our true nature.
There's so much I'd like to get to, but time does not allow. So you have to promise at some point we will resume this conversation, because it is more than important for people to get a perspective that's outside of the chaos. I think when you're in the chaos, you don't even know it's chaos. I have this thought that we almost morph into different beings just to handle this stuff, whether you're sitting in traffic or you work 16 hours a day and all the rest, almost like an armor or a crust comes over us. We get disconnected from compassion and all the rest. And then when it comes on our watch and something happens to us, we wonder, you know, how do we handle that? And that's the last piece of this. But a quick nod to your comments about the environment. It's fascinating to me. And the height of the human ego that says we live in a biosphere that we didn't create, that operates without our permission, and we think we know what to do with it. Fascinating, isn't it? Fascinating. So the last thing I wanted to ask you and allude to was something that I think a lot of people have a real difficult time with. And in the book, you talk about in 2012, the disturbing headline about the Nepal crash that killed 15, and seven of them, of those that died in that plane crash, were from Mumbai. And the odds of you knowing those seven people are astronomical. And that little subtitle is When Bad Things Happen to Good People. And so as we get ready to finish up here, this concept that if we were taught that if we do everything right, if we work hard, if we don't cheat, if we pay our tax, whatever it is, you can do everything right and still life will intervene and put it on our backs. And what I appreciate most, Radhanath, is the real person in this. You have anxiety, you have confusion, you have disappointment, all the things that we all have, you have too, and you express it so wonderfully about working through those things. And so that was a particularly painful time for you. And what do you say to someone who is listening, who's done it all right, like our friend Dorothy in the beginning of the book, and all of a sudden, all she said in the first part, I went to church, I put my money in the plate, I did all my prayers, I didn't cheat my taxes, I'm a good person. Why are these bad things happening to me? What do we do with that?
Of course, we only have a couple more minutes, and that's a very deep subject.
Yes, it is.
But in principle, if I can just focus on one aspect of how we can respond, certain things we may not understand so well. I'll give an example. Once I had malaria, and I was really on the verge of death. This was in India. And the doctors came and told me what I have to do. Now, I didn't insist to the doctor, before I take any cure, I need to know which mosquito bit me, what time of the day, on what day, and where I was. I may not understand those things, but I do understand that somehow or other I got bit by a mosquito and I need to take the cure. So a lot of the things that happen to us in life, we may not be able to give or understand the logical reasons behind the scenes of that event. But we can respond in ways where we see this as an opportunity. I've seen people on their deathbeds with cancer, and they were the happiest people I ever saw in the world, because they felt that this cancer has brought them to a position where they could deeply connect with their own souls and deeply connect with other souls in ways that they couldn't do if they lived 100 years more.
Mm-hmm.
And they were grateful, and they were happy, and they lived those, their situation was beyond their control, but what was within their control is they could be the happiest they've ever been, and they could bring more happiness than they ever did. And when that living force leaves their body, you know, what a beautiful, liberated, enlightened state they're going to be and beyond. So in whatever situation we have, how could I live with integrity? How could I deeper connect with the divine within myself? And how could I really learn that the true beauty of life is that in giving we receive?
Well, I have to tell you that, you know, this, how do you take 40 years of connecting with people all over the world and condense it into 54 and a half minutes? I think we've done a pretty good job, Swami. This book is called, and I want to thank you. I thanked you before you came in there, and I just wanted people to know you're kind of here spending time with your father and doing that, and you took time out of that, an hour out of that, to spend it with us, and I deeply appreciate it. I know that somebody somewhere needs to hear what was said today, so I appreciate that. The book is called The Journey Within, Exploring the Path of Bhakti, A Contemporary Guide to Yoga's Ancient Wisdom by Radhanath Swami. He is also the author of the international bestseller, The Journey Home. I wish you safe travels, my friend.
Thank you so very much, John, and it's truly been a blessing in my life to have this time with you and to have this time to try to connect to everyone who's listening.
Very good. Life Matters continues right after this.
Know what's going on with your favorite artists, bands, and celebs. Sign up today to get the Radio.com daily newsletter, which covers all your breaking music and entertainment news. Go to Radio.com/newsletter to get updates directly to your inbox. That's Radio.com/newsletter.
You're listening to Life Matters with John St. Augustine.
So I'm going to lock down this one for another week, episode 26, The Journey Within. Listen, it wasn't even scraping the tip of the iceberg. It was taking a little tiny sliver of the iceberg off the top of this book. It's called The Journey Within, Radhanath Swami. Fascinating more than all of it is a guy who grew up in Skokie, Illinois. He was born in Chicago in 1950, and in 1968, he was right here in the middle of the Democratic National Convention, all that was going on with the cops and Mayor Daley. So this isn't some guy that was just dropped off of the planet like you hear him now. He has transformed and reformed his life over the last four decades. And I say to myself, when I have conversation with someone like this, if they can do that, what am I capable of? Maybe you'll take that away as well. And just real quick, because I kind of alluded to it before, couple people that one I knew and one I didn't know have passed away in the last 3 weeks, and I just wanted to make mention of that. Earl Hamner, my great and dear friend from the Waltons, fascinating writer, wonderful man, just a dear, dear friend to me for 15 years, 92 years young, passed away. I think so many of the conversations we had over the years about, you know, the real gristle of life and how we have character in difficult times and challenges and what have you. And not unlike what the Swami just said about his book. And I just wanted a special shout out to Earl, wherever he may be, that he is sorely missed. And of course, Merle Haggard, you know, the hag, all those years in country music, and came up from a very hard scrabble life and prison and drugs and you name it. I should have asked the Swami, because he didn't know any lyrics. Maybe I could have got him going a little bit. My favorite song, though, is Wish I Were Down on Some Blue Bayou with a bamboo cane stuck in the sand, but the road I'm on don't seem to go there. So I just dream, keep on being the way I am. I can live with that. Life Matters. See you next week.